We're going to move now to Appeal 25-2458, Trost v. Bisignano. We're going to begin with oral argument on behalf of the appellant. And Mr. Rafman, we'll begin with you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm Mark Rafman for Nicole Trost, plaintiff. This appeal is a narrow but unmistakable set of omissions that led to Ms. Trost being found.
Is the appeal limited to the sleep apnea issue?
Not the sleep apnea issue, the moderate sleepiness and objective sleep study test. Because at step two, whether sleep apnea is a severe impairment is not our argument. That is, the court has consistently held that to be a threshold issue. The ALJ is still required to go through the entire record, and when there's any severe or combination of severe impairments, assess all combined impact. And the combined impact that's omitted here is a series of two sleep studies that demonstrate and then, quote, re-demonstrate moderate sleepiness.
So is it an RFC challenge?
It's an RFC challenge. Specifically, I mean, the RFC that makes the most sense would be for off-task time. Ms. Trost described this to her doctors as irresistible attacks of daytime sleepiness. I believe she said that between the two tests. Her comments were omitted from the decision. Both tests were omitted from the decision and never discussed by the ALJ.
Say her statements, did she testify in front of the ALJ to that effect, testify under oath to that effect?
Her comments at hearing and also in the function report were about exhaustion, which I would characterize as somewhere between fatigue and sleepiness. She used the word sleepiness in the medical records, which the ALJ still required as an allegation of symptom to assess the consistency with, even if it's not specifically at hearing. The context of this is she has, 7 or 8 years of lengthy records, many impairments, both physical and mental health, including PTSD, which is also known to have sleep disruption as a symptom. So
I should have been more clear in my initial question. Sure. Given all of the disabilities or impairments that she has, we're limited to the sleep issue as an umbrella.
Essentially, if you look at how they found her to be not disabled, they found that she could do sedentary, unskilled jobs like document preparer and addresser. The way they got there is by plucking sleep right out of the RFC, leaving everything else. And had that been considered, a symptom that would have had to be accommodated in the RFC, the question becomes, can she sustain full-time work in those jobs?
You probably have prepared statements, but there's a lot here in the factual record.
Yeah.
So I was under the impression that as the hearing approached, I don't know if you represented her at the hearing or not, but as the hearing approached, she had started taking medication that had mitigated some of the effects of the sleep deprivation and inability to sleep. Is that correct?
I think that was a little bit before the hearing. The hearing was, I believe, a few years after the date last insured when this evidence is related to. The other aspect of this case is that it's a limited time period that we're looking at because she amended her onset date to May of 2020.
Right. The reason I'm asking that is your adversary is emphasizing that, look, if the effects of sleep deprivation, if the effects of the sleep apnea are so severe and so limiting, you would expect that would be what she would feature in her own testimony in front of the ALJ, and she did not.
Well, in context, she's testifying to 7 years of impairments, including her PTSD, including her physical issues and her inability to stand and walk for very long in a 40-minute hearing. So these are not, the nature of these hearings, they don't go through, day by day of the medical record.
No, I get that, but if Ms. Trost believed that one of the reasons, among others, that she was not able, to work full time, even in a sedentary job, was because of the effects of daytime sleepiness, because of the sleep apnea, the sleep deprivation, all that, you would expect her to say that.
She used the word exhaustion. So she did testify to exhaustion during the day when she was going about her daily activities with her daughter. I can get
you know where that's at in the record.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's in the hearing record. I believe I have it here.
It's during her testimony.
Yeah. So page 55 of the record, and also page 55 of the record is in the hearing testimony, and 295 of the record in the function report. She uses the same terms, exhaustion, to characterize that aspect of the impairment. I think she makes it clearer in the medical records with the irresistible attacks of daytime sleepiness, but it's essentially the same thing in our view.
Yeah. Did anybody opine on her behalf that this daytime sleepiness just left her unable to work, just full stop?
There was not an opinion to that effect in the record. No. Yeah. But essentially, our view is what defendant asks this court to do is to look at these objective tests, look at this concept of moderate sleepiness that was defined by two independent physicians, one of which suspected narcolepsy, the other one diagnosed, you know, moderate sleepiness as the term, and translate that into the RFC such that you can deem it irrelevant, harmless, not useful. The only person who should be weighing the evidence in the first instance like that is the ALJ. We feel it's inappropriate for this court to step in and deem that evidence, you know, useful or not useful. It's only the ALJ that should be reviewing whether around the time of her date last insured, those two tests, you know, would have had a work preclusive impact in addition to everything else that already left her basically unable to do anything but, you know, sit and do unskilled work.
You make a couple statements in your brief that are very, very broad, and I don't think you intend them to be, so I just want to ask you to clarify.
Sure.
Okay. When you say that the ALJ impermissibly omitted consideration of an entire line of evidence, you know what I'm talking about? Okay. What are you referring to? What is the entire line of evidence? Because there is discussion of sleep deprivation, sleep apnea, sleep problems.
The excessive sleepiness during the day. It's the two sleep study exams and a series of comments she made, including the irresistible attacks, that focus on that one symptom. And this is where we spend some time in our brief.
So that's what you mean by an entire line
that's
of
what
evidence?
That's what I mean by an entire line. Because it's an entire symptom that we argue would have led to a work preclusive finding. And if you pluck that right out of her RFC, then she can work. So that's what we're referring to there. And we did cite to there were, these are obviously, you know, district level courts decisions in Indiana, but in our reply brief, there are two cases that are somewhat on point. The one where the ALJ does not mention, I'll get the citation for you, the sleep study in the same way that he omits it here, the judge remanded that claim on the same basis that they omitted a line of evidence. Therefore, if you don't consider that full symptom, it cannot be considered based on substantial evidence.
Would you like to reserve the remainder of your time?
Yeah, I think so.
Thank you, Mr. Rafeman.
Thank you.
Ms. Schock, we'll move to you now for oral argument on behalf of the appellee.
Thank you, Your Honor. Meredith Schacht on behalf of the Commissioner of Social Security. This court has repeatedly explained in recent decisions that the ALJs need not mention every piece of evidence, and they're subject to only the most minimal of articulation requirements. So Ms. Trost demand that the ALJ specifically discuss the sleep studies or this concept of sleepiness at greater depth than the ALJ already discussed the issue, it really flies in the face of the court's precedent. To address some of the court's points to counsel, you know, counsel pointed to testimony about exhaustion, but in briefing really makes a lot of hay out of the difference between fatigue and sleepiness, and that sleepiness is somehow distinct. The ALJ discussed fatigue multiple times throughout the decision. Throughout the decision, addressed fatigue as a symptom of many of the impairments, including sleep apnea. The ALJ also discussed sleepiness, specifically naming it, identifying the allegations of sleepiness, and discussed the only opinion that was ever tied to the sleep apnea or the sleepiness, which was that Ms. Trost shouldn't drive. And that was a limited opinion. The ALJ discussed it, the ALJ considered it, and said, I see this opinion. I've considered it. But it doesn't demonstrate an ongoing limitation because she was clearly driving in less than 12 months from when she was told not to drive. The evidence reveals that very clearly. To your point, Your Honor, about when Ms. Trost began receiving treatment, medication that treated the sleepiness symptom, she received that medication beginning in about April. So her first sleep study was December of 2021. She got that medication, was prescribed in March. She received it in April. She very shortly after that reported that it was helping, that she felt better. She was less sleepy. She went to her doctor and said, I would like to be able to drive again.
Do any of the regulations or any guidance the commissioner has put out draw a distinction between sleepiness and fatigue? And the reason I ask that is because Mr. Rafman makes a point about it, but I thought in some ways, isn't it the flip side of the coin? In other words, if you're not sleeping and it seems like for a while there, she had major sleep trouble, that you would be fatigued during the day. And I'm just using fatigued in the sense of like a synonym for being tired. But is there something I'm missing in that?
No.
Any of your regulations speak to it?
No, there is no law. There's no regulation. There's no policy that demands that the ALJ address sleepiness as unique from fatigue or as unique from exhaustion. Ms. Trost pulls in some academic literature discussing whether it's a separate symptom and that the medical establishment should address it as a unique thing. But that's demanding way too much of the ALJ in this circumstance.
Well, isn't the ALJ going to be focused on, wouldn't the ALJ say, well, whether you want to call it fatigue or sleepiness or drowsiness, pick your word. I just need to think about how it's going to bear upon your ability to work.
And essentially the ALJ did that. Counsel suggested that the RFC that makes the most sense for addressing this fatigue or exhaustion or sleepiness was an off-task limitation. The ALJ specifically addressed off-task limitations on page 31 and said, I really don't find the evidence supports an off-task limitation or excessive absences. That's on page 16 of the decision, 31 of the administrative record. Because Ms. Trost's representative at hearing made that same assertion that she would be off-task, and the ALJ said that's not actually what the evidence shows. It doesn't even show that she's experiencing ongoing symptoms of sleepiness. So the ALJ really did very thoroughly consider the issue, regardless of what word you assign to it. The ALJ thoroughly considered all of the evidence here. It was a 22-page decision. The ALJ talked about sleep apnea and sleepiness and fatigue throughout, despite the fact that Ms. Trost did not testify that she had any difficulty driving, that she was falling asleep, that she had any sleep-related. She certainly did say that she had fatigue and exhaustion, but not that she was falling asleep. You know, she was unable to stay awake. She was taking care of her daughter. She was driving her daughter around. She was participating in medical appointments on her phone while she was driving. So clearly, the only medical opinion that has any limitation tied to obstructive sleep apnea is that she shouldn't drive. The ALJ considered that opinion very directly and said that the evidence does not support that as an ongoing limitation. And the ALJ did not err in that consideration. The ALJ was really quite thorough here.
Can I ask you a bit of a technical question going back to the beginning? I think you can help me with this. The disability onset date is May 26th of 01 or 2021. Mm-hmm. And then she is last eligible at 12/31 of 2021. And that's what leads you all to say that the period here is limited between May 26th and December 31. Does that mean that there's only 7 months of disability benefits at stake? How does that work?
Because this was a Title II application, which was based on her earning record, she has that eligibility for those benefits are tied to when you earned that money. So you get eligibility for a certain amount of time after you've stopped working.
Oh, I see. Okay, so they could extend beyond 1231 and they would just go for that period of time?
Well, what happens is if you qualify for the benefits during the time that you're eligible for it, so long as you qualify during that time and your disability has not changed, you continue to receive benefits.
Indefinitely?
Indefinitely. You have to be found disabled before your eligibility expires, but once you are found disabled, your benefits would continue indefinitely.
Okay, and how do you know when the eligibility expires? Is that set by regulation or something?
Yeah, it's a formula.
Okay, thanks.
And so in this instance, she would have had to show that she was her symptoms disabled her prior to December 31st. Certainly evidence after that date can be relevant as to whether she had ongoing symptoms at that time. The evidence demonstrated that she did not. The ALJ really thoroughly considered the evidence here, and so we would ask that you affirm.
Thank you, Ms. Schacht. We'll now move Mr. Rafman back to you for rebuttal argument.
I'll be brief, Your Honors. Just a quick point on, I want to read here from the ALJ decision on this conflation between sleepiness and fatigue and pointing to the regulation that makes it problematic for Ms. Trost.
And the page you're on?
I'm on page 19 of the decision, 34 of the record. So it says, this is on the opinion of her ability to drive. Nonetheless, it is noted that the record considers the claimant's complaints of fatigue at times in limiting her. Oh, I'm sorry, let me go one sentence up. Furthermore, the claimant testified that she is able to drive and does drive, such as take her child to preschool, and did not allege being limited due to sleepiness when driving in her testimony. Nonetheless, it is noted that the record considers the claimant's complaints of fatigue. So what the ALJ does is he recognizes that the allegation was sleepiness, and he looks at the fatigue. Now, the ALJ is not responsible on his own for determining the difference, choosing the word, nor is this court, and we would never suggest otherwise. The only thing the ALJ is responsible of doing is looking at what the doctors say. And if you look at the sleep studies in question, the doctors never mention fatigue. The studies are emphatically not about fatigue. They are specifically about extracting sleepiness as a separate symptom, moderate sleepiness, and in this case, potentially narcolepsy, although what the doctor settled on was moderate sleepiness, and saying that is the impairment. So the district court made the same error as the ALJ here, in which both tried to say, yeah, it's the words are similar, it's one and the same, but in doing so violated the regulation that says the ALJ has to weigh the objective evidence as it is. They can look at opinion evidence and they can look at claimant testimony and say it's not consistent with the record. But Social Security regulation is clear that when there's objective, clinically accepted evidence, the evidence is what it is. So the ALJ's duty is to be true to what the doctor said. And if you look at those notes, the doctors talked about only sleepiness. And that's why this conflation becomes a problem that thus leads our client to being improperly found not disabled. So for that reason, we ask the court to reverse and remand.
Thank you, Mr. Rafman. Thank you, Ms. Schacht. The case will be taken under advisement.